This is Cliff Central.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the cliffcentral.com website where there's a show for you.
Minutes past 10 on Friday morning, cliffcentral.com. This is Sex Talk with John T. Searle. Unscripted, unradio, and uncensored. And this morning is the second part of our HIV show, the human face of HIV and AIDS. We spoke quite a lot last week about the bigger picture, a lot of the clinical side, what's happening in terms of research, what are the numbers in South Africa. And this morning, talking more about the human side and how you actually contract HIV. What are the body barriers involved? What are the more risky kind of acts that increase your chances of contracting HIV? So we have quite a depleted studio this morning. Morning, Tamar.
It feels like the olden days, John T. How are you?
We can just
take off our clothes and nobody would mind, like in the olden days.
We can still do that.
Well, not with Lisa and Dr. Anastasia. They kind of like look at me. No,
well, never mind about that.
Okay.
And a very special guest, Gillian Gresack.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Thank
it's
you.
It's so cool. Thank you for coming to be with us this morning. Tell everybody quickly, what do you do? Why are you here? You're here because you were invited or told to be here.
Yeah.
You were under orders.
Well, I think basically, a lot of people refer to me as the condom queen, the Iron Lady of AIDS. I've been doing this since the epidemic started in the mid-80s, been looking very forward to becoming redundant, but unfortunately that hasn't happened. And, it's something that I'm very passionate about and something that I think is, people just need to be constantly aware of everything. And it amazes, I think we went through a period where we were sort of like quite fatigued with the whole thing.
Mm.
And, we need to kind of research and constantly be aware, and people's lack of awareness always amazes me.
Mm. Okay, cool. Thank you. So we're going to talk lots with you.
Cool.
But first, it is time for
Ninja Sex, Chocolate Starfish, Twitter Bang, Calypagium.
Today's dirty dictionary word is
futonari. Today's dirty dictionary word is futonari.
Dirty dictionary word.
So, any clue what futonari is?
Not a clue. That's a new one for me.
Want to guess?
Sounds like sex on a futon.
Sex on, that's pretty good.
It is. Something to do with feet?
Something
foot?
Well, that was kind of the guesses from the peanut gallery.
Yes.
Were a Japanese foot fetish.
Oh.
Or the Japanese Kama Sutra.
So you put wasabi in between your toes. So,
and somebody licks it off.
Okay.
There we go. Could very well be.
And then you can foot
fuck
them.
Put little
them.
Bits of sushi in between your toes.
I like that. Stinky and beautiful.
So foot fucking would be pretty safe sex.
Yes, it would be. No AIDS.
I wonder, would athlete's foot be transmutable?
You might get a few fungus down the road, but not something, That's it. Now that we deprived our listeners, they're not feeling horny anymore. Now we can chat about really important things.
That's it. So join our conversation on 0861-555-189. Message to studio on WeChat, Eros Life SA,
and Sex Talk
Cliff C.
Yeah.
And please join our conversation. Let us know about Dirty Dictionary. And your questions, your perspectives on HIV, your stories. We are going to start with an interview that we recorded in the week with Dr. Cindy Van Zyl, which was, Cindy does the health show on Cliff Central, And it's very much focused on the practicals. How do you actually pick this up?
It's actually, it's people, yeah, this is for youngsters. Let's see what you
not
say.
Not only youngsters.
It's true, not only
a
youngsters.
Lot of people just don't know.
Like, do I kiss? Do I can't kiss?
Yeah.
The basics,
you know,
exactly.
If I have HIV and I kiss you, are you going to get this?
Exactly.
If you give me a blowjob and you swallow my sperm, are you going to
exactly.
get this? And those were some of the questions that we asked Cindy.
Yeah.
So if you have any other questions, please send them in to us and we will very happily answer them. But we're going to play this interview with Cindy. It's 20 minutes long. And then we will carry on talking to Gillian.
Cool.
So anyway, so thank you very much for being with us this morning.
No, thank you for having me.
And we
me.
Want some very specific information from you because this is such an important topic. It's such a huge topic and there's so many different ways to look at it.
Yes.
So we did a great interview last week with Kevin Reby. An infectious disease specialist.
Yes, I used to work with him. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he was really cool. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we're spending the rest of our show looking very much more at the human aspect of HIV, the relationships, what happens after diagnosis.
Mm.
But what we would love from you is some very specific information. How does this get into my body?
HIV.
Yes.
Okay.
Carry on.
Okay. So basically you get HIV primarily through sexual intercourse.
Yes.
Okay. So we know that most of our infections happen through sexual intercourse. You can also get HIV from contaminated blood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So needle stick injury or a blood transfusion with blood that's that has HIV in it, and or if you're exposed to someone's blood or bodily fluids, you could get the virus that way. But primarily it's through sexual intercourse, the exchange of genital fluids. And if one person is infected, then you're at a higher risk of getting HIV.
Yes.
But one thing I must say is that it doesn't mean that if, you know, not every sexual encounter with someone that's HIV infected will result in HIV transmission.
Yes.
That's something that's very important to remember.
Because that's one of the big myths, you know, and this big fear that if you're in the same room as somebody,
it's
going to happen. So first question, if one of us has HIV and we are kissing.
Yes.
Is the other one of us going to get it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's not enough HIV in the saliva for you to be for you to infect the other person. So remember, with each bodily fluid, there's different concentrations of the virus.
Yes.
So genital fluid and blood and breast milk have got high levels of virus in them, but saliva has got very little. So that's why you can't transmit the virus through kissing.
Okay. If I am having oral sex with a woman and she has HIV, am I going to pick this up?
Highly unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah. Because in any case, our mouths are very, I mean, our mouths have got lots of enzymes in them. The saliva itself is a very strong, you know, fluid. And so chances are the virus wouldn't survive that environment. But what I do know is that, you know, we always say with oral sex, just make sure that the person that you're performing oral sex on does not have any open lesions, any sores, any gaping wounds. You know, so you need to see. You need to make sure that you look and you make sure
spotlights.
Absolutely. So many people don't do that. You need to examine. Even before you give a blowjob, just make sure you've looked and everything is in order before you go down there, you know. So we know that, you know, if just say there was an STI or there was an open lesion and you have bleeding gums and so on, you increase the risk of transmission because of those exposed areas.
Okay. Let's go back to the blowjob.
Yes.
If you are giving me a blowjob and I come in your mouth and you swallow this, are you going to pick this up from that?
No. Again, the gut. Very, very hostile environment for semen and for HIV. So no, you wouldn't be able to get HIV from that.
Okay. So this is an incredibly genitally oriented virus.
No, it is. But I think, you know, what we've been trying to encourage people to do is to use cling wrap when they're performing oral sex. And whenever I tweet about this, everyone just laughs. So, but you know what? If you're really, really worried, then rather do that or use condoms, flavored condoms. And that's the reason why condoms are flavored.
Seriously do that? Do they put Glad Wrap on their cocks and on their vaginas?
Well, from the reactions that I'm getting, I think people don't. I think they find the idea very repulsive. But I'm saying that if you are really concerned, if you're really, really worried and you have nothing else, that's an option for you.
Wow.
That's an option for you.
I had on a workshop a couple of years ago, a couple who, when they were young, were too embarrassed to go buy condoms.
My goodness.
And for all of their teenage years that they were going out and having sex, what did they use?
Glad Wrap.
And it worked for them fantastically.
Because it's thin. It's thin enough for the sensation to still be there. Yeah. And it does the, you know, it's a barrier. It does the job. But you're right. I don't think people do it. I tweet about it only to say that if you don't have options, here's something that you could use. Mm. Ideally, flavored condoms are the way to go, but not everyone can afford flavored condoms. Yeah.
Well, I see that the government issued condoms are now, I believe, grape flavored. Is that right?
So over the next few years, they'll be introducing other flavors as well, but they do have grape scented.
Grape scented. All right. So we're starting to roll them out, but I think one of the things that, and I know that when it comes to assessing risk, we can never ever say that there's an absolute 0% chance.
That's
and I think one has to be conscious of the idea. You know, you always have a right to practice safe sex. Mm.
Yes.
You can't be put into a position by a partner where they say, oh, listen, I listened to the sex talk show and John T. Searle was interviewing and Dr. Cindy said that there's absolutely no risk, so we're not using protection.
Yeah.
You do always have that right to use protection. Mm. And like you say, there are options. If you don't have dental dams, because they are available, but not very widely so, you might struggle to find them. If you don't have dental dams, you can use Glad Wrap. You can slice a condom in half, fold it open, use that as a dental dam. You always have a right to protect yourself.
Absolutely. That is so true. And I think that's an important concept to bring across because you know, when people don't have options, they end up doing it anyway without any protection. And that's where the problems come in.
Yeah.
I think in the years that I've been working with HIV, my biggest gripe is that we don't test before we start having sex with someone. You know, if we could get into the habit of testing before.
Mm.
And, you know, we have HIV test kits available over the counter. Right? But there's only two pharmacies that I know of in Johannesburg that are selling them. Mm. The Department of Health hasn't endorsed over-the-counter test kits. Mm. But I say, in our setting, it's so important.
So what does over-the-counter test kit mean?
It's a home-based test kit. Which means I can... Do you buy it?
Yeah, and test myself, essentially.
And you go home and you test yourself.
Okay.
And the Department of Health hasn't
embraced
that.
I wasn't aware of that, and I think it's a fantastic idea.
But doesn't it give you an answer of, like they usually test in clinics, of 2 months...
So if you test negative, you need to repeat that test after 6 weeks, right? To make sure. And if that second test comes out negative,
so it's not I'm going to have, say, I picked up a guy in a bar, and then we go home, we quickly test ourselves, and we go for it.
No.
Yeah,
but I think in relationships, start off, have a baseline HIV test, and then test again and again and keep on there. But you have a base and you know that at the beginning we were both negative or you were negative and I was positive. You need a baseline. And the reason why I say this is important is because many times people come to me and say to me, I need to know when I got HIV. Is it possible that I got it from this guy? And I'm like, well, if you never tested before,
how would you know?
We have no way of figuring out when and who may have infected you.
So what's,
absolutely no way.
What is the actual time period before this appears positive?
Oh, 6 weeks.
Okay.
The tests that we have now are very advanced. We're using fourth generation tests. And within 6 weeks of you testing positive, an HIV test will be able to pick up that you're positive. So in the past, it was about 12 weeks. But technology has really helped us and it's come down to 6 weeks. So if you're testing negative, like 6 weeks, after 6 weeks you're testing negative, then you can relax and know that you're HIV negative, but still do protect yourself because, you know, things
of course
things
always happen. Yeah. No, I think that one of the best startups will be when there will be a kit that you prick yourself, little prick, one drop of blood, and it can tell you STDs, STIs, HIV right now. And then you can at least
instantaneous when you meet somebody.
What? Yeah. That's
like it's instant when you meet
exactly.
somebody.
And then you know what's your status now. That will be the top of the art.
Yeah, but we need to get into the culture of testing. I think we haven't really nurtured that culture of testing. And also there's a lot of fear.
Yeah.
I think the way HIV arrived in South Africa, there was a lot of fear. There were a lot of myths. There's a lot of death and despair. So people haven't forgotten that.
Mm.
You know, we've inherited a very dark, you know, HIV history. And that's why things are, you know, the way that they are. But they're changing, but there's a lot of myths to still work around. And the Charlie Sheen issue for me, the Charlie Sheen story, just the way Twitter was reacting, South African Twitter, because I was watching, just shows that we have a long way to go before we break a lot of these myths and stigmas.
Mm. But that is the biggest thing about it in South Africa, and with so much sexuality, full stop, is the myth, the stigma, that it's such a closed topic that we don't have a culture, regardless of the specific culture that you grew up in, and we don't have a national culture of talking about sex and sexuality.
Exactly.
And the issues.
Then. You can't talk about HIV without talking about sex and sexuality. The people tend to separate the two.
Yeah.
People separate the two and it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
I agree with that 100%. And I think the flip side of that preoccupation, that stigma around HIV is that we think that there's only two things that can, two unwanted, potential unwanted yeah. effects
pregnancy.
From having sex, pregnancy and HIV.
Mm.
And it's not just those two. We have to remember HIV goes hand in hand with all the other sexually transmitted mm. infections.
Exactly.
And again, just coming back to that topic about like oral sex. So perhaps your risk of contracting HIV from oral sex is very low, but you could potentially get gonorrhea, you could potentially get
exactly.
herpes simplex, and it's very important to remember, once you start contracting these other diseases, if you haven't got HIV, they do put you at a higher risk
True.
For contracting
the
it.
The immune exactly. system goes
exactly.
down.
Human papillomavirus is taking the front seat at the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
HPV
the virus that,
is killing
yeah, HPV
people.
Leads to cervical cancer. Mm. But do we speak about it enough? Are we telling women to all go for pap smears, all go for screening? No, we are so preoccupied with sex being about pregnancy or HIV, that with the, and human papillomavirus is the most common sexually transmitted mm. infection. You can get it without penetrative sex, mm. right?
But Anastasia keeps offering pap smears left, right, and center, and so and far
people,
nobody's interested.
No, people need to do them.
Well, they need to do them, yeah. definitely.
Well, we've offered, you know, in just outside the studio here.
Yeah.
We've said any time, just kind of
yeah,
come in.
Yeah, Anastasia is giving,
like,
giving them
yeah.
for free.
And, you know, and so far,
that's a
nobody here has taken her
I'm,
up on
I'm
it.
Doing my bit for public health, but I yeah. think the problem is that Jonty insists on watching the pap smears.
No, I don't know.
And a lot of people are not okay with that.
Well, I volunteered, but you both don't want me, so I don't know what to say anymore.
Well, speaking about watching, I mean, there's a new, yeah. there's a new kit. A PEP, an HPV testing kit, mm-hmm. a home-based
wow.
HPV testing kit. So you buy the kit, you take it home, mm. you know, you do the, almost like do the PEP smear yourself,
yeah.
and they will pick it up from your place, courier it to the lab, and get the results back to you. So mm. I want as many women as possible to get hold of that kit, because there's so mm. many barriers to going for a pap smear. There's mm. so many issues. If you're on your period, you can't have it done, but no one tells you that. Mm. You might feel shy, you might feel embarrassed, you might not want a male doctor or nurse mm. to do the pap smear. It's
and
uncomfortable.
In the public health system, how do we make safety available to people?
And
how widespread is it? How let me get this clear in grammatical terms.
Grammatical.
How widely spread is the safety aspect available in the public health care system?
So in terms of condoms,
like having a choice on who's going to examine you, who's going to test you.
Oh, okay, no.
Wow,
no.
that is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, we are working in a system that is very stretched for resources
yeah.
at the best of times. And, you know, I always say, all right, you can have a very awful experience if you go in
yeah.
as a patient because you don't know what you're getting. I do see the other side of the argument as well, because the nurses and the doctors who are staffing these clinics are under tremendous pressure.
Yeah.
Mm. They're seeing so many patients per hour, and they feel like they, if they take the time to try and entertain that kind of a request, that some other patient is going to be losing out. Mm. So
yeah.
it really is a very complex issue.
Yeah, Anastasia's right.
It's, yeah.
No.
And one of the other things that Cindy mentions, and I think it's so important, is that you subject yourself to so much scrutiny and so much judgment.
Mm.
If you come in for an HIV test and you go through the entire pre-test counseling and then you
mm.
have the test done and then post-test counseling, I mean, if that result comes back positive,
mm.
is it really safer for you to get that result in the clinic in
mm.
front of people that you don't know, who you might perceive are judging you and shaming you for what is normal human behavior?
Mm.
Or is it actually safer to be getting that result in the privacy of your own home
mm.
where you are in control of your own healthcare?
Mm.
So I think the conventional thinking is we have to police patients when it comes to giving them results.
Mm.
We have to make sure that you're going to be safe with your result. We don't always trust you with it. But at the end of the day, it's your body and it's your healthcare,
mm.
and we need to start empowering people.
Yeah, and that's why I'm all for these home-based HIV
mm.
test kits, you know. And
yeah.
yeah.
But it really puts the responsibility with the individual. And as we spoke about last week, you have to be responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, it's so true. I mean, we're not forcing people to have HIV tests.
Mm.
We can't do it. And we shouldn't do it,
mm.
but we should try to create an environment where people feel safe in having those tests
mm.
done.
Because
yeah.
there are countries that enforce HIV tests. I mean, look
mm.
at, I've just come from the Middle East. In the Middle East, if you want a work permit, one of the things you have to undergo a blood test, and one of those blood tests is an HIV test.
Mm.
If you test positive, you don't get a work permit, and they test you every 2 years.
Mm.
If you test positive in 2 years, they don't renew your permit and you get deported.
Do you agree with that policy?
No.
Dr. Anastasia also doesn't agree. We all know that.
Yeah.
And we support her in that. And I want to say that I didn't actually know till about a few months ago that people that are carrying the virus
yes.
not necessarily, they can live a whole full life with a proper medication that keeps under control. And that is something that most people don't know. There is still a myth, definitely. I'm sure people maybe that are not investigating or not self, tutors that we don't know what can you do. So if you have a patient and he was just tested and he's an HIV positive, what would you recommend? Where is he going? What can he do? Does he need, can you give us the basic guidelines?
Just like the walkthrough. Okay. So basically, after you've tested positive, you need to find out what your CD4 count is. So that's telling us how strong your immune system is. So in South Africa, if your CD4 count is less than 500 or below, you start treatment. And then so we do blood tests on you before we start you on treatment to make sure that the treatment we choose for you will work for you, you know. So that's the typical journey. HIV positive test comes back and you go for your baseline blood tests. The most important thing in all of us is, I think, to accept your status. I mean, I don't start any patient on treatment who's still in denial. It doesn't matter how sick you are. You need to be ready to start the treatment because that commitment is a lifelong commitment, right? So you will start those tablets and take them for the rest of your life. But if you're not ready for treatment, there's no way you're going to take them. You know, if you're still angry, if you're still harboring a lot of, how did I get it and why did it happen to me? If you're just not ready, mentally ready, then you'd rather not start. Because the problem with starting and stopping is that the virus gets a chance to become resistant. Mm. And then now we must put you on more complicated treatment and it just gets more and more complicated like that. So, I mean, our program is very advanced. I think we've been in the program, the South African HIV program is about 10 years old or longer. And what we're seeing now is patients who are getting tired of taking treatment.
Wow, that is
so. That's something that I don't think we were. I mean, when I started working,
we weren't prepared for that.
Yeah, like you know, all these years ago, I never ever thought that a patient would come and say, "You know what, doctor, I'm actually tired of this medication and I want to take a break."
Does it have, by the way, side effects?
It initially has side effects, but after like two to four weeks, the side effects fall away. But some patients come back and say, "I'm just tired. I'm done with these tablets." And I always say to them, "Okay, I can't force you to continue taking treatment. But ideally, don't stop. But if you want to stop, you know, that's your decision. But I always make sure I write everything down because legally, I could get into trouble." And people come back after a year or so and they're sick again. So I've had quite a few patients. This year, I've had 4 patients come back having taken a break from their medication. And it's so much harder for me to take you from very sick to healthy again. It's not impossible, but it's so much effort. So we need to accept that there's some people that just, they're tired.
Maybe some psychological advice, maybe some social workers therapy. That help.
Well, that's where the completeness, holistic.
Exactly.
Seeing people as every aspect of the being is involved in this, mental, spiritual, psychological, energy, nutritional, absolutely everything is involved in this.
Yeah, that's a really good point because for us as doctors, it's very easy to say, take this medicine for the rest of your life. And it's difficult for us to understand why you wouldn't want to do it.
Exactly.
Because it's treating the HIV. And from a clinical point of view, that is the outcome that you want.
Yeah, we want
but then
well.
You
we
have to remember that this individual has to take the tablets every single day.
At the same time.
They have to take them
no
at the same
what.
Time. Some of them are still related to food intake. You have to take them a certain amount of time before or after you eat. You have to go for regular blood tests. You have to go pick up the medication every single month at the pharmacy or the clinic or wherever it is. And it's this very big commitment. If you're going to travel, you have to take the tablets with you.
Does it cost money or does the government pay for it?
So you can access it in the government sector with everything is free. And then you can also take it in the private sector where you have to pay. So most people in the country take it from the government, but the queues and so on, and then every month you must go and fetch your medication. But if we have enough stock in the government, you can get 3 months supply. But again, like for example, Christmas is coming up. If you go to a clinic where they don't have enough stock, you can't actually go home all of Christmas and all of January because you need 2 months supply. And if you've only gotten 1 month supply, what are you doing? Are you going to take 1 month, skip January and come back in February? So patients have got so many decisions to make around treatment. You have people that cut their holidays short because they need to come back and take medication. So Dr. Anastasia is right. And so I've learned, it's been very humbling for me as a doctor because the patients that I've been seeing in the private sector, the ones that say, I'm tired of medication, that come back after a year, it's humbled me to realize that, yes, I mean well when I say to someone, don't ever stop your medication. I've learned to appreciate that for some people, it's just too much work.
There's a fascinating thing. I want to end with this. And thank you so much for this. And you are so welcome on our show anytime.
Thank you.
Know that.
Yes,
thank
please
you.
Come back.
Yeah. Years ago, I read a book called Love, Medicine, and Miracles by a guy called Bernie Siegel. He's a Harvard-trained surgeon, deals mostly with cancer patients. And in the book, he said most people don't heal because when something like this strikes them, he put it in the context at the time of being diagnosed with some form of cancer, it becomes our definition, our self-definition. Mm. We can't see ourselves with anything beyond that.
Yeah.
So that's where we stay. And I think this falls into the same category, that you see yourself as a diseased, kind of broken person.
And we treat you like that.
Instead of saying, here is this whole being, this is one aspect of your life. Yes, it changes your life radically. There's no question of that. Mm-hmm. But you are so much more than that in the fullness of who you are, so of heart, of spirit, of mind.
That's beautiful.
That's so beautiful, John. That's so true.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cindy.
So true.
Thank you for this, Jonty.
Do you know what Black Friday is? It's big in America and taking off in South Africa. Black Friday is the day following Thanksgiving Day in the United States, which is the fourth Thursday of November. Since the early 2000s, it's been regarded as the beginning of the Christmas shopping season in the USA, when all the shops have massive sales. People go crazy and camp outside shops the whole night for the spending frenzy. Here's the really good news. Firstly, you don't need to leave home, because today everything is online. And even better, for the first time in South Africa, Clinique is celebrating Black Friday and are offering a 30% site-wide discount exclusive to Cliff Central listeners. Log on to clinique.co.za, use your offer code Cliff Central to qualify for your discount. Valid today, 27th November, until 6 p.m. Buy your Christmas presents today with this exclusive Black Friday bargain. Remember, your code is Cliff Central online at clinique.co.za.
Christmas is on the way, and so is the happiest family event of the year, the Parkview Charity Christmas Market at the George Hay Park in Parkview from the 27th to the 29th of November. The Christmas Market is a weekend of fun, unique arts and crafts, brilliant gift ideas, kids' fun galore, big screen sports, a beer tent, and a champagne and oyster bar with continual live music. Parkview Christmas Market, for a great time, with all proceeds going to charity.
So what we do have to ask in terms of Black Friday and shopping and big queues, because Krispy Kreme opened this week, you know. Wow. They've been Krispy Kreme, the donuts, and there've been all these huge queues. I have to turn your mics on. Hey?
Yeah,
that would be helpful.
You know what? In some cases, it's actually helpful. Like
sometimes it's even better.
When I'm under the table doing some stuff to the guests, you know, that you always tell me to do, but yeah, okay. Now it's okay.
Okay. What's the human face of HIV in South Africa at the moment? Is there still such a stigma?
Well, fortunately, there isn't much stigma anymore, but it obviously is still prevalent in certain parts of the country and with certain communities. It's very much felt. So I think that generally people are much more aware now, but they still don't know about the important stuff that you've just had on the radio, which is, about how you get it and how you don't get it and that kind of thing. And so the questions still come, but that's generally what it's like now. And, I'm also just thinking of, I found it very disturbing when I was talking to some students, who were all graduates, engineers, basically, and some accountants and those sort of highly qualified people. And their attitude was, well, it's okay to get HIV because you just take antiretrovirals and you're fine. And I think that's the other thing that's quite disturbing, because it's not like taking a Smartie.
Mm.
You know, these are highly toxic drugs.
Yeah.
And
they're for life. That's what we heard from Dr. Yes. Cindy, that you have to deal with it for the next 60, 70, 80 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's for life, most people can't even stick to a 10-day regimen of antibiotics. Exactly. So I think that again, there's a complacency that worries me enormously.
Is that because this has just been around and been with us for so long?
Yes.
That we've kind of, it's like the 100 years war kind of thing. You know, we're just so tired of it.
Yeah, it is. It is tiring. Mm. It's like, I always think of that wonderful line from What was his name? He was a singer many, many years ago, but the wonderful line, and he said, trudging across the tundra mile after mile. Mm. And that sometimes does feel. But I think that what we all have to recognize most importantly is that it's my life.
Mm.
It's my health. It's my body. Mm. If I'm not going to care for it, why should anyone else?
Mm.
And I think that that's just it. And a lot of people are so casual about their bodies.
Mm.
So I would hope that there was more vibrancy and so more awareness.
So people come see you. How do they know about you, of you? What do you do? An HIV positive patient comes to you. What happens then?
Well, most of my clients have been referred to me from doctors who are treating the patient. So it becomes like almost like a triumvirate where we work together with that patient. So from newly diagnosed and working with them to deal with the issues that they're confronting themselves. Mm. Because first of all, there's the denial and then the shock and all those kinds of things that they go through. But more importantly, it's coming to terms with how they feel about themselves, because they feel so, they always say, they feel so dirty. Mm. They feel so ashamed. Mm. They want to hide themselves from the world. They don't want to stand up and be proud of who they are. And recognizing that HIV is just one tiny component of your life. It isn't you.
Yeah, it's not the fullness of who you are.
You know, it's just one tiny thing that you have to deal with. And to deal with it in a constructive, comprehensive way, and to recognize that you have this for life, and so it could be any other thing, and now you must deal with it. It's a chronic disease.
Mm. The state of counseling in South Africa for HIV, where are we with that?
Well, that's fortunately much better than it was. Mm. Many years ago, we wouldn't have anyone, really. And psychologists and social workers stayed clear of it, as did most doctors, actually. So today, it's like an accepted chronic disease that needs to be managed. And everybody has been trained generally. I mean, obviously, there are exceptions, but generally, people are very clued up.
Mm.
And on board, and everyone just deals with it. But I think that when you look at more like disadvantaged communities, and by disadvantaged, I'm not just talking about monetary disadvantaged people. I'm talking about people who live far away from the mainstream, and those kind of communities, and also, obviously, very, very religious communities. They are severely disadvantaged when it comes to HIV education, and they don't know anything about it.
The level of denial in religious communities must be huge.
Enormous. Enormous. And of course, the Bible doesn't help.
Yeah.
And I think the saddest thing for me has been the number of clients that I've seen who have just really wanted to come home, whether it's to their place of worship, and to be accepted, whether they are gay and HIV infected, straight, HIV infected, you know, whoever they are, they just want to be to belong.
Apart.
Yeah.
I was listening this morning to an interesting fact about immune system.
Yeah.
That when you are alone and you're rejected from a society, or you are a loner, your immune system drops. And same happens when when your immune system drops, you actually also withdraw from people.
Yeah.
So think what happens when you don't have enough guidance, enough explanation, enough support, even government support, because I'm thinking poor Jillian needs to see, I'm sure, endless amount of people that some of them can't even afford. I'm sure you're doing so much work. And you need to first understand and deal with questions you never had to deal with before. And then all of a sudden you're so afraid. And think if abortion was such an issue. When we said with Alna and with Whitney from Marie Stopp, and they said to us that an abortion is such a thing that you're afraid to talk to your parents, afraid to talk to the community, to confront. This is for life. Yes. And this is going to influence every sexual act you're going to have in your family. And of course, to admit if you're homosexual or if you just have something you need to take care of.
Now, the newest research about our nervous system is that there are actually three nervous systems. There's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. Yes. And our third nervous system is a social nervous system.
Oh, wow.
That is totally dependent on our social, our sensual, our physical interaction.
Oh. Very interesting.
That is very interesting. I think that the other group that is also forgotten about, and they themselves are unaware, is the group in like 60 upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to me how people in that age group don't actually think that they can contract HIV. And I've seen a number of those people. And they don't, it's quite a shock for them because, first of all, they're coming to terms with the fact that they've become sexual after a long, long time. Mm.
And it's a group that is increasingly becoming highly sexual.
Well, exactly. And they don't, you know, it's, they almost think of HIV like pregnancy. Mm. You know, I can't get pregnant. So, you know, and it, they don't realize the impact that this can have on their lives.
Mm.
And obviously the treatment's going to vary as well. So it's, those are the kinds of groups that really need, we need to reach out to, and we need to do more of that. And I don't think we're doing enough.
Mm. When we say religious, we're talking across the board.
Yes.
Not confined to one as a
no,
to
not
another.
At all, not at all. Unfortunately, you know, the Bible. I don't know all of the religious texts, but I do know that the one that resonates very deeply for me is "Thou shalt not lie with a man as with a woman as with a man," and that's. When you think about it, it's completely logical. You wouldn't lie with a man as you would with a woman. Mm. I mean, you just wouldn't.
Well, sometimes you might, but that's another story.
That's another story. But generally, and that's been taken so out of context, and that means that we're opposed to homosexuality. And that, for me, it's like a serious stretch. I mean, it's like, hold on a minute. What are you actually saying here? So I think that you know the, a lot of people because of that live in denial, and then of course the you know in other countries we don't have it so much here, but IV drug users are also another group.
Mm. Yeah. Very high risk. Yeah. Yeah. How many relationships after an HIV diagnosis, a positive diagnosis, how many relationships last? In I know it's a kind of a wide ranging question.
Yeah,
but. Do relationships tend to last more or do they tend to actually fall apart?
They're like any relationship, you know, they work if people work at it. Mm. I've had discordant couples where the one partner's HIV negative, the other's HIV positive. I've had couples where they both infected. And I think that, you know, the whole point is to actually come to terms with what has happened, why it's happened, how it's happened, and to work at the relationship. It's like any hurdle that you deal with in a relationship.
Because any chronic illness will have impact on a relationship.
Exactly.
Full stop.
Exactly. Yeah. This one's a little deeper because it's sexual in nature, and that means an element of betrayal. Mm. And so people tend to get... feel that they can't trust each other and they feel betrayed and they feel hurt and angry and upset. And at the same time, there's also an element of judgment.
Yeah, enormous judgment because of what we've loaded onto our sexuality.
Exactly. Mm. And then I've had, you know, and then of course there are couples where the one person has been raped.
Mm.
By an outsider. And so that in itself is a double whammy to have to deal with for both persons in the relationship. Yeah. It's huge and takes a long time to actually come to terms with.
Are ARV standard treatment for people who have been raped today?
That's a very good question. It should be. It's about being aware. Because you can't, if you don't ask for it,
it's not going to be offered.
It's very unlikely that it's going to be offered. And a lot of the clinics don't like to keep it because it has a very short shelf life. And so the cost becomes quite formidable because you have no idea what's going to happen or not happen, and therefore you have surplus that basically gets turfed.
And the incidence of rape in South Africa is phenomenally high.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. And again, you know, it's people just don't think it can happen to me.
Can happen once.
Yes.
Like one exposure and that's it.
Exactly. You know, HIV doesn't discriminate.
So I've heard,
it just looks for the gap.
Yeah, no illness, no virus does.
Exactly. Yeah. It just looks for the gap and takes it. And wherever that gap's going to come, it'll come.
So are there just one question. Are there any people that are immune to HIV virus, to the virus itself?
That's also an interesting question. There's been a study going on in, I think it's Tanzania, I can't remember. Definitely in Upper Africa, where they've been studying these women who have been repeatedly, they work in a type of brothel, and they've been repeatedly exposed and haven't contracted HIV. And they've been studying them for, I think, about 5 years now and trying to work out what it is. So they are a group, but I certainly
Nobody knows why.
Yes, and I certainly wouldn't like to take any confidence from that.
Exactly, yeah, no, that was not the suggestion at all.
Not your suggestion, but just hope a listener isn't thinking, I wonder if I'm one of those.
So here's something interesting. And I have no idea where you are on this, so let's explore a little bit. The idea of consciousness and our beliefs having an enormous impact on our bodies, on our health. So we generally put sex in a space that's loaded with guilt, with shame, with embarrassment. It's not celebrated for being beautiful, for being sacred, for being this amazingly high act. And a lot of the way people have sex is nowhere near there. And this is more kind of on a personal level. What kind of impact do you think that actually has?
Oh, I think enormous impact. Over the years, I've often wondered, why is this person infected and I'm not? I have a sexual life, like most people, I would hope. And
it depends what you do in your sexual
we would
life.
Hope
where
too.
That comes
we
with
would
what
hope.
Most
we're with
people
you in your
do
prayers.
Or don't do.
Thank you. And I think, you know, why is it? I'm not much different to this person. Why are they infected and I'm not? And for me, the common denominator over the years has been these are people who are afraid. And they haven't owned their existence or in their life. And they... And as I say, it's across the board. I've seen this no matter who they are. They feel that they don't deserve to live. And so for them, getting HIV is almost like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
a strong need to be punished.
Yes. So now I'm going to be punished, and this is the ultimate punishment. And God's abandoned me, and this is so disgusting. Nobody would even want to be near me, and I deserve what I've got.
Years ago, I came across a study. It wasn't really well publicized, and you'll see why now. That it was a group of people who were having an enormous amount of sex, and quite a lot of it was unprotected. And they had an incredibly low infection rate.
Yes.
Why? They were actually, it was a group of swingers.
Yeah.
But they were so celebratory
yes.
of their sexuality.
Exactly.
It was such a beautiful, such a positive experience for them.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to read and really just made me so much more aware, because everything that I do now is about really the consciousness of things.
Yeah.
And
it just really put it in such a context.
Well, I agree with you completely. You know, and I don't think there's been sufficient social research. Mm. There's been way too much medical research.
Well, that's where the money lays, so yes, it's very clear.
Exactly. Nobody wants to put money into research that is on sort of soft social issues. Unfortunately.
There's no gain for anybody in that. There's gain for the drug companies.
Correct. But I have found that to be the common denominator, and I do think that when people come, you know, I've experienced that as well, when people come to terms with who they are and that they actually do have a life and that they're making a conscious choice about a living versus dying, then their whole lives just start changing. Yeah. And everything starts coming together in a more constructive way. Mm. So I do think that that's something that I would love to be involved in, or I'd love to see some research done on that. Yeah.
Interesting thing. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
the psychiatrist didn't diagnose any conspiracy theory.
Yeah, but
anxiety.
There's so many little things coming through at the moment in various channels, and a little bit more to say it's not just a little conspiracy theory, that there actually are more treatment options that are so much more effective out in the world than we are aware of in a general term.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? What have you kind of heard or picked up on?
Well, I haven't heard or picked up on anything because, as you know, it's a pretty closed market. But what I do think is I certainly agree with you. And I've always wondered about traditional health practitioners in South Africa and certainly other countries I'm not aware of. So that's why I'm talking about South Africa. But I do wonder whether there's something to all these things and whether there is something that we're missing because there's no money in it.
Yeah.
I have seen a number of people who change their lives constructively in a very healthy way, who are not taking drugs, who have got definitely stayed well for a long time, but that might well be because the disease hasn't advanced.
Mm.
So it's difficult to say whether it's put down to one factor when it comes
to human beings.
No, exactly.
But the possibility is there that there is just so much more if we're willing to explore the fullness of options.
Yes.
That's important.
Gillian, you're talking about a lot about the shame and the anger that people come to you. So I want to understand, maybe just go there a little bit more and just talk a little bit about what happens. How many sessions would you recommend for a person that is battling now, sitting at home, thinking, must I go see somebody or just can I keep it for myself? I'd rather die than go and expose myself. How many sessions? What is the budget that a person needs to? Let's give a practical way to deal with this. Come, today is the first day of the rest of your life. What do you do?
Okay, good question. I think, first of all, most counselors are free. There's no sort of legislation in South Africa for funding of counseling.
So it's all NGO, NPO.
Yeah, basically. And even in the Department of Health, there are hundreds of thousands of counselors, and there's no charge for any of it. I think that the first step, well, also what I reckon is that people should look at about 8 weeks first off.
Mm.
Because I don't like what I call the Woody Allen syndrome, where you just kind of like go in therapy forever and ever. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, about 8 weeks, you should be seeing some results then. If you're not, then you're in the wrong place and you need to switch. I think the other thing to recognize is that a lot of people are very nervous with counselors and doctors.
Mm.
What we have to recognize is that you're paying for a service, even if when you're not paying a counselor, and it's got to be a relationship. if you don't feel that you can connect with this person,
don't be there.
Don't be there. Mm. What do you keep going for? And the same for counselors. You know, I think that very often they keep doing this and they don't like the person or connect with the person or whatever. So that's important as well.
Very important.
I've learned that because I have a policy that I choose who I work with.
Yes.
Because if it's not going to work for me and for the person, the people, the couple, then it's not going to be effective for any of us.
Exactly.
And there's no point.
Exactly.
And it actually becomes counterproductive or destructive.
Yes. And I think that, again, a lot of the people that I, when I first see them, they lack assertiveness and they lack a sense of self. And so they're not willing to say, well, I actually don't think I can work with you. So it then behooves the counselor to say, don't think this is going to work. Happy to refer you.
And that, I think, comes from a bigger picture we have of kind of bowing to health authority.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody in that position. They know best.
Completely.
When a lot of times they don't, actually.
No.
Or they don't know enough to give you choices.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mm. And I'm also reminded of one of my favorite doctors saying to me that, you know, we're just like plumbers. You pay us for a service. Mm. And I think that that's exactly it. We do put them on some kind of platform, and it's not necessary. You're paying for a service.
Mm, absolutely.
Jilin, one more question. Mm. I want to know if it's possible to ask on a more personal level.
Mm.
One myth that you actually, while you were working, that you thought that actually, one thing that that surprised you in your work, something you didn't know, something that surprised you with working with HIV patients. And the second thing that I really have to ask is, what is the changing point? Do you see that this counseling actually can change a person's life for the better, not only in HIV matter, you know, it's health related. Do you see when a person comes, what does he go through? Do you see any, a changing point that changes life in other aspects when he's getting this specific counseling?
Okay. Sure. Okay. So myths, my least favorite one that comes up all the time is, can I get HIV from a mosquito?
Mm. or sitting and talking to you, or he will give it to you maybe.
Drives me crazy. The other one that boggles my mind completely is, if somebody's HIV positive and he kisses my cheek, can I get it from his saliva? Yeah.
And that's why that ridiculous interview we did with Dr. Cindy is so important.
Yes, completely. So those ones are probably my
the
worst.
Myths. Okay, and something that you discovered while working?
Yes. I think I'm sorry, I've lost my
– So it's fine.
The second question?
The second question was, first of all, what did you discover that you didn't know, and how is counseling interfering and influencing their lives in other aspects?
There's a lot that I didn't know in the beginning. That caught me off guard. A lot. I remember the one that really took me completely off guard was fisting. Mm. I had no idea what that was. It was like, whoa.
And can I get it from fisting?
and I was like,
how did they get to ask you what is fisting? Can you get HIV from fisting? Yeah. Well, that was the question.
It wasn't in counseling. It was in a public discussion because I did a lot of talks through Radio 702. Sorry to mention them.
Yeah,
no, don't we?
At the high schools so that was where it came up, and I was like, whoa, hold on a minute, on a public platform. So that was a big shock for me.
So typical sex talk conversation, how we go from HIV to fisting.
Yes.
We're going to have to come back to some of these questions because they are really important and they're really big questions.
Yeah.
So futanari is the Japanese term for a hermaphrodite.
Good grief.
And it literally
– A female?
Yes, and it literally means double form.
Double form.
So
in Japanese.
Yes, in Japanese.
Can you say it with an accent?
You can say it any way you like.
Hot. What is it? Futanari. No, it doesn't work. I don't know how they
improve. That was quite good.
Yes, yeah. As long as you sound angry.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Two beautiful events coming up this week that we have. On Tuesday is our last water flow massage for the year. It's one of the most beautiful experiences that you can have. It's sensual. It's healing. It's releasing. It's relaxing. It's
not
connecting.
Sexual.
It's
intimate information on www.eroslife.co.za. And on Wednesday, one of my favorite workshops, which just teaches you the most awesome sexual skill, which is the art of fucking. So everybody thinks that you just kind of put it in and you wiggle it around and that's kind of what it's all about. There is so much more. No. And the awesome thing about this workshop, it's for singles and couples, and you don't have to be new during the workshop.
And you don't have to fist anybody?
No. That's okay, for another day.
So I'm not coming.
There is no nudity on the workshop.
Okay, I will come.
Information, www.eroslife.co.za.
If I'll be good, can I get naked?
You can do whatever you like after the workshop.
Okay.
Next up is Casper and the team. We will be back next week. Thank you again for your messages, for your calls, your emails during the week. They are just so appreciated. And every time I get an email from somebody who is learning something from the show, who is expanding something, it really touches me. And this is one of the favorite parts of my week, is being here. I really love it, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you, guys. Please, please keep them coming. One of my favorite songs of all time. If I had a top 10 of songs, this would be in it, or probably top 5 that we are playing out with. We wish you so much pleasure.
Thank you.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands, sailing to reach for a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside, and the downhill run to Papa'ete.
This is Cliff Central. Cliff.